The mystery, says author Tom Kimmerer, is not why these trees are disappearing, but why they are still here. Today on UK Perspectives, I'm Tom Goodell. On his webpage, today's guest describes himself as a scientist, author, and photographer. Tom Kimmerer is also a former UK faculty member, and his latest book is called Venerable Trees: History, Biology, and Conservation in the Bluegrass. Welcome to UK Perspectives, Tom.
Thank you very much, Tom.
And today we are in Castlewood Park near the Loudon House. Kids are playing basketball, the wind is blowing, and the trees, and some of them, are just beginning to leaf out. And I wonder, as we look around at these magnificent trees, what sparked your interest in trees?
While I was on the faculty at UK, I had a farm in Garrett County, and I would commute to Lexington every day. And I would pass by these absolutely enormous trees. And I've lived a lot of places, and I've explored a lot of places, and the number of really huge trees, both in the rural parts of the Bluegrass and in the cities, the number of huge trees is just astonishing. So after driving by them for a few years, a couple of decades actually, I realized that first of all, these trees are disappearing fast, and that I needed to do something about it because people were unaware of the existence of these trees.
Yeah, you just pass by them, you take them for granted.
Absolutely. You know, people will take a vacation and go out and see the giant sequoias and the redwoods, and on the way to the airport, they're passing hundreds of, you know, giant trees. So I started doing some research and started working on the research that went into the book. And I wrote the book, it's not technical at all, it's written for, at a layperson's level. I wrote the book because I realized that we in central Kentucky and in the Nashville Basin, where this habitat also exists, are blissfully unaware that we live in the middle of the rarest ecosystem in North America, and that's the woodland pasture ecosystem. Woodland pastures are naturally created. They were created by a combination of drought and American bison, and there were huge herds of bison here prior to settlement in the 1779. Probably the largest populations of bison in the eastern United States were in the Bluegrass and the Nashville Basin. And these animals are not only huge, but they're great wanderers. They're very athletic. They'll wander, a herd of bison will go 25 or 30 miles in a night and a couple hundred miles in a season. And what they would do is graze heavily on the grass and cane that was here. And then they would leave, go to other parts of the Bluegrass for several decades. And that allowed time for these trees to get established before the bison came back. The result of that was when settlers arrived here in the 1770s, they found this amazing landscape, and all the early accounts of this landscape were that nobody could believe it. It was just astonishing. You had these great big open grown trees shading grass and cane, and then other areas with just grass and other areas of forest. And they discovered that they were able just to move right in and settle and farm the area just by chasing the bison away. They didn't have to clear the land. In fact, they had reason to keep the trees because they provided shade. An interesting piece of trivia about Lexington: this is the only 18th century city on this side of the mountains that is not on a river.
Yes.
And there's a good reason people put cities on rivers, and that is that's how they got around. But cities on rivers were all, you know, that land was originally forest, so they had to do a huge amount of land clearance. Here, they didn't have to clear the land at all. And so they moved in, they moved their cattle and sheep in, and the horse farms came later. And the result of that is we have many, many trees that are older than Lexington, older than the United States, and we live in the middle of them. Here in Castlewood Park, we have, I think the number's around 25, I can't remember, trees that are pre-settlement trees, that as individuals they were here before settlement. We are losing these trees at an astonishing rate. A graduate student did a survey in 1950 of the number of bur oaks in Fayette County, and in a sampling survey, and we've repeated it, and it's clear that we've lost about 90% of the bur oaks in Fayette County. Most of that
just in that short time.
Yeah, just in 60 years.
In tree years.
No, in 60 years. Which, yeah, they're 500-year-old plants lost in 60 years. Almost all of that is to development. Some of it, a fair amount of it, and especially now, is to lawnmower damage and modern lawn care, and a certain amount of it is to lightning strikes. We're standing in front of a tree that was hit by lightning last September, and it's in a pretty high traffic area of the park, so we don't know if we can keep this tree. We're going to wait and see if it leafs out in a couple of weeks and appears healthy. But those factors, development, lawnmowers, and lightning are big factors in why we're losing these trees. Now, if you go outside of the urban area of Lexington into rural Fayette County or the other surrounding counties, then you find intact woodland pastures on farms where you might have 50 or 100 of these great big old trees that have been kept by the landowners and are doing well. But they're not reproducing. And they're not reproducing because we don't have what the bison established, which was intermittent grazing, heavy grazing for a while and then leaving it alone for a while. We graze and mow all the time.
And so we're mowing down the seedlings?
We're not giving them any opportunities to grow. So we're working with a number of landowners to establish tree pens in which these species can be allowed to reproduce naturally or in which we can plant them.
Well, you use the term venerable trees. How do you define that?
Well, I use that term because if you show me a great big beautiful tree of certain species, I can say, well, that's probably a pre-settlement tree, but I can't always be sure. Some of these blue ash trees were established as late as the early 1900s. Others are younger, others are older. So I decided to use the term venerable trees because it says these are trees that we should respect, that we should venerate, that we should take care of, even if we don't know their exact history. So I avoid using terms like pre-settlement. And of course, you know, pre-settlement is kind of a loaded term. It's who are you referring to?
Which settlement, yes.
I don't like the term old growth because it has implications about forests that are not true here. So what we know about the venerable trees is that they establish themselves naturally, many of them in the 1700s, but others probably earlier, that drought played a big role, that bison played a big role, and that if we don't do something to take care of the existing venerable trees and plant new ones, we're going to lose this entire ecosystem. And it is the rarest ecosystem in North America, the woodland pasture ecosystem. It only occurs in the Bluegrass and the Nashville Basin. It's not savanna, it's not maintained by fire. Woodland pastures do exist in Europe, and they are the subject of intense conservation effort and research in England and France and Spain, parts of Russia, especially though in the Transylvania region of Romania, where there's extensive woodland pastures that are where conservation efforts are taking place. At a large scale, and the people like Prince Charles are involved in it. That's what we need to do. We need to scale up. Now that I've finished the book, we now need to scale up our conservation efforts so that the book actually has some impact. So we can say, yes, these trees, we're going to make sure these trees are here for our grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and future generations.
What would you say is the most venerable tree in central Kentucky?
Oh, I can't pick one. I can't pick one.
What's your favorite?
On Tuesdays. Oh, I have so many. I just can't tell you. We do a lot of what we call field courses, where we take groups of people out to look at these trees and learn about them because, as I said, people didn't know about them. We did one here in Castlewood Park just a few months ago. But the reason I bring that up in respect of my favorite, our next field course is on April 30th in Woodford County at Airdrie Stud Farm, one of the really famous horse farms owned by the Jones family. And there is a bur oak there that we are pretty sure is one of the three largest bur oaks in existence. And so we're going to go see that tree. So certainly, you know, my eye is drawn to a lot of the really big ones. But some of the smaller trees are fascinating as well.
You mentioned conservation efforts in Europe and Transylvania, which reminds me we have our own Transylvania
right.
Here in central Kentucky, and it too has its venerable trees. Mm-hmm. And one of the ones that struck me in your book was the kissing tree.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Now, the kissing tree does not fit the strict definition of a venerable tree. It wasn't here pre-settlement because white ash trees, and that's a white ash, don't live that long. They don't live more than 200 years. But that's my point about venerable trees, is that a tree like the kissing tree, we should venerate. We should take care of them. We should prize, you know, even if it's not, doesn't fit a narrow category of being a pre-settlement tree. But yeah, that's quite a famous tree because back in the days when students were not allowed to engage in public displays of affection, that was the one place on the Transy campus where kids could cuddle and kiss a little bit. So that's an interesting tree.
trees have many uses.
Many uses, yes.
Well, speaking of Transylvania, University of Kentucky, your background at the University of Kentucky, what role do universities play in preserving these trees or not preserving trees?
Oh, well, it's absolutely critical. And in fact, I'm glad you raised that question, particularly about the University of Kentucky. The University of Kentucky has quite a large number of venerable trees, of pre-settlement trees. You get to the point in Lexington where you walk around a neighborhood and you realize you find one great big huge tree, and then you start walking around the neighborhood and you find more and more, and there's actually some scattered around this neighborhood, and you realize that those were woodland pastures and they just lost a lot of their trees. Well, the University of Kentucky campus, clearly parts of it were woodland pasture because there are some old trees there. They've of course lost a lot, and I have to say some of that's to really bad mowing management. There's two trees in front of Commonwealth Stadium that probably get more attention than almost any trees on campus because people tailgate in front of them, and they're about to fall over. They're in really bad shape because of chronic mower damage. But what I would say to their benefit is the University of Kentucky has probably done the best job of any regional institution in planting appropriate trees, native trees. There's a whole field in front of the administration building where they've done a very good job of planting native trees. And so I think, you know, on balance, I think they're doing a pretty good job.
Well, you mentioned all of the trees that have been lost over the years, some to lightning, some to bad management, construction, whatever it may be. What does the future hold for the venerable trees that are in your book?
Well, you know, sooner or later everything dies. But, you know, I think many of these trees, if we take good care of them, have hundreds of years of life in front of them. But taking good care of them means doing things that might not be intuitive. For example, fertilizer and modern lawn care are absolutely anathema to these trees. There are a number of institutions where that have woodland pasture trees in the landscape, and the trees are all declining because they've gone to high tech. You know, they're growing perfect grass. And anytime I see a lawn with perfect grass and a venerable tree, I say that tree is going to be in trouble. These are trees that these are tree species that evolved in stressful, low nutrient, low water environments. And now all of a sudden you give them a lot of nitrogen, a lot of phosphorus, water them, they don't do well. It definitely shortens their lives.
It was counterintuitive in some ways to us because we think fertilizer and water, that's good.
That's right, exactly. Nothing benefits a tree like good neglect. But the biggest one is mower damage. I see so many trees that are repeatedly struck by mowing contractors or homeowners, et cetera. That's certainly a big one. One really important factor, though, is, and I encourage this for both homeowners and institutional owners of these great big trees, is get somebody competent to come and inspect your trees. Get a certified arborist who's experienced with very old trees, preferably a master arborist who can inspect your trees and has experience with old trees, and say, yes, this is what we suggest you do. Because often, you know, you'll see a dead branch on a tree and all it takes is a little bit of pruning and you can bring that tree back into safe condition. I just saw a tree taken down last week by a homeowner who was afraid that it was going to fall on her house. And it was in perfect condition. It had no decay. It was solid to the base. People, especially because of the ice storms of the last few years, people are afraid of big trees, and we sort of need to get over that fear.
Yeah, I seem to remember in our own neighborhood a big tree in, I believe, your backyard that took out the power in our entire neighborhood.
No, that wasn't my tree. That was somebody else's tree. I own the biggest white oak in Fayette County.
Okay, so it was not your tree.
And it did nothing in the ice storm. It bent and moaned a little bit, but it was other people's trees. But that is an important point. Because that tree is so close to my house, I have to have it. I have an obligation to have it regularly inspected so I know it's safe for my kids and for my neighbors. And I think that's generally true.
Anything else that you wanted to talk about that we haven't raised?
Well, I want to talk about big open landscapes. And what I mean by that is, you know, in the farming areas of Fayette County and the surrounding counties, we're working to restore and maintain woodland pasture ecosystems. But within Fayette County, or within the urban service boundary of Lexington, we have a number of very large landscapes that are basically the habitat of mowing contractors. So the University of Kentucky, for example, is planting a lot of trees. They're doing an excellent job. But there are corporations that have, you know, 150 acres that are doing, that are basically paying mowing contractors to mow. There are, this is a big one for me, there are churches and schools that have a substantial amount of acreage and have a substantial number of people who are potentially volunteers to work on projects that could be planting trees in their landscape. Let's take a church, for example. You get a volunteer weekend, you have a bunch of parishioners plant trees. We can get them from the Kentucky Division of Forestry quite inexpensively, and plant the trees and then maintain them, tend them over years. And then what actually happens is your landscape management costs go down because the grass isn't growing as fast. I think there's tremendous opportunities in this city and in other towns around the Bluegrass to take advantage of these open landscapes. I mean, right now, a lot of these large lawns in front of churches or around schools are the habitat of mowing contractors and nothing else. These ancient trees are the habitat of birds, mammals, insects, just all kinds of organisms that live in them. You know, most of these trees have hollows, and you'll see owls in there, and you'll see raccoons, and you'll see all kinds of animals. But a sterile grass landscape is not doing anybody any good.
And trees like this one that's in front of us, how long does it take them to grow? I guess my sense is that this beautiful, magnificent tree here is possibly 500 years old. So I'm thinking, if I planted one of these in my yard today, 20 years from now, it would be 3 feet tall, because I think of them as being slow growth. Am I wrong there?
Yeah, actually, you know, this is a bur oak, and bur oaks, contrary to what most people think, is not a slow-growing tree if it has adequate sunlight. These trees, originally, when they first got established, most of these trees were growing in the shade of grass and cane and other trees. And so they grew slowly for sometimes 100 years or longer, and then started speeding up as they got opened up. But, you know, a good high quality bur oak planted in your landscape, you'll see changes in it from year to year. And I always encourage people, you know, if you don't think your tree is growing, you're not watching closely enough.
Kind of like watching the hour hand on a clock.
There is an exception to that, and that is, my mantra now is, plant the smallest tree you can afford. And what I mean by that is, what we're seeing now, and I've seen this myself, but a number of researchers have verified it, is these great big bald and burlap trees that are 2, 3, 4 inches in diameter. You plant those out in the landscape and they stagnate. I've seen trees on horse farms that were planted 25 years ago and have not grown. But I can get a bare root seedling from the state nursery for $5, and I can plant it in the landscape and I can watch it grow. And what we now know from actual experiments is that small trees planted in the landscape will not only grow faster than the great big trees, but will outstrip them, will be bigger than them in 10 years. So I encourage people, and that's why I was talking about, you know, getting parishioners and volunteers to plant trees, is, you know, little kids can plant small trees. Look at Reforest the Bluegrass. It doesn't take a landscape contractor and $800 to plant a great to plant a small tree. So I'd like to see us just doing a lot more tree planting. But then those small trees require care. You have to protect them from the lawnmowers. You have to prune them properly. There's all kinds of things that go into that.
Thanks, Tom. Our guest has been Tom Kimmerer. Our complete interview and a link to more information about the book, Venerable Trees, are available at wuky.org. For WUKY, I'm Tom Goodell.